Now then, you are very welcome along to this week's RTE Rugby Podcast. Another absolutely hectic week of Champions Cup, Challenge Cup and the Women's Six Nations to get through. Bernard Jackman and Alison Miller are with me to help me get me through it all. And folks, we're going to start with the big game from last weekend. Terran York College's fifths, defeating the Dublin Dogos to win the Leinster Metro Division 10. Bernard, I presume you've prepared a lengthy piece of analysis for us, or are you holding that off for against next week or something?
I'm still waiting for the footage. I think it's copyrighted, but no, well done. Look, winning any trophy, no matter what sport you play, is great. So I hope you celebrate it suitably. And is the season over now?
No, cup still to go. We won our first round last week, so second round is coming up on Saturday. I won't be around for it. I'll be at the Aviva, unfortunately, but here's hoping we could bring a second pot back.
You've got the confidence up.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. So we'll wait for the full analysis, Bernard, until potentially there's a cup back.
Against the head in a couple of weeks, we'll have it sorted.
Exactly. Now, I was under strict instructions to get that in right at the start, so we'll move on to the real stuff now. But I do want to start, guys, with something that's been in the headlines for a few years on and off, but it popped up again on Monday. Bernard, this idea of the inaugural Club World Cup potentially coming in 2028. So the story on Monday is that it would be between the European clubs, the Super Rugby and the Japanese sides. The first, it would be happening in 2028 every 4 years. And the top eight teams of that year's Champions Cup would be advancing to this global tournament in the summer. And as such, there would be no Champions Cup knockout stages or no Champions Cup winner that summer. I'm not sure what it is. Is it that we have such a big game coming up this weekend, like Leinster La Rochelle, which we'll be getting straight to in a minute? But I'm just a little bit cold to the idea of this competition.
Yeah, me too. It doesn't catch me at all. Well, maybe it'd be something we grow to love. But no,
yeah,
maybe
in 4 years' time when it actually does happen, it'll be great. But I saw it on Monday and I just kind of went.
No, I agree. It's not. I would be interested in Northeast South every year. You know, I think that would be a good thing. But just more games, trying to bring in more countries. For me, it's. I think we can actually try and just secure this Champions Cup, get that back to where it was in the calendar. It's still obviously very prestigious, but has lost a little bit of its lure, and last weekend just diluted a little bit in terms of quality. You know, again, the group stages have lost a little bit of the jeopardy because of the fact it's so hard not to get out of your group. And then the round of the last 16, I could lose that really. You know, I just found there's a lot of one sided pictures on paper and as it played out, and I just think we need to get this right first before we look to expand.
Yeah, and then Alison, like, you kind of have to wonder at what stage are we just flogging the players as well? Because
even to look at
this season, Ireland started their World Cup pre-season training on the 19th of June. The URC final this year is going to be happening on the 22nd of June. Now, I know there have been a few little breaks and a couple of weeks off here and there for players, but at the end of it, there are some players who could potentially be looking at a full 12-month season. Like, at what stages, we all love rugby, but at what stages is there too much rugby?
Yeah, like, you know, she's the mental exhaustion, I think, is the big one really as well. And, you know, you want players to want to play these competitions. So if you're going that long into a season and, you know, you put something like that in, you know, do the players buy in? Do they want to be there? And that, like, without buy-in and wanting to be there isn't much of a competition really. So does it then come to, you know, you rest the bigger players and it's the more fringe players that play, and then that takes away the value of what the competition is meant to be. So yeah, look, I'm not sure about it either, to be honest. And I don't know a whole lot about it because I haven't been really interested in it either. So it hasn't grabbed me to look more into it really.
And then, and Bershak, as you pointed out, the idea of a one-off North v South thing is actually appealing enough, and like we got a taste for it with Munster and Crusaders this year, and rugby league fans would see it every year where the Super League champions take on the NRL winners, and that has been a big one-off event for probably 20 plus years now, it feels like, from the rough bits of rugby league that I've been seeing. Like, the idea of a one-off game is actually appealing enough.
Yeah, it is. Look, we saw the crowd that Crusaders brought to Páirc Uíomh, and obviously Munster had won the URC. I think probably you'd like it to be the winners of the Champions Cup. I think that's probably where it would get to if it ever became part of the calendar. But yeah, there's a demand for it there. But like, obviously, again, you know, Crusader, it's just getting the right timing as well, which isn't easy because Crusaders came over in pre-season. Yeah. It wasn't a full strength Crusaders team, so logistically it'll be hard to get it bang on where you get the best of the best from both hemispheres playing. But I think there is a demand for that amongst the players. I don't know if there's a big demand for this new proposal. Certainly some of the WhatsApps I got on earlier in the week, it just looks a little bit arduous for what's really there, you know, in terms of travel and games. So, but look, at the end of the day, you know, everybody's trying to make sure rugby washes its face. So financially, and they are going to look at new ways to try and exploit the commercial possibilities.
Yeah. And it brings us on then to Leinster and La Rochelle this weekend, where, as I said at the top, that like, I think part of the reason I was a bit cold to it was because all of a sudden we have this such a great game coming up in the Champions Cup anyway this weekend. Like, Leinster and La Rochelle for the fourth season, fifth meeting in four seasons. And I know La Rochelle, it's been one-sided-ish in terms of results, with La Rochelle winning three of the four knockout games. But what we do have now is, like, this is the great modern Champions Cup rivalry of this era, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Oh, sorry.
Sorry. Go.
yeah, it really is. And, like, you know, they've been close games, but La Rochelle have come out the better side of it and have that mental edge going into it. And obviously, the you know, it's fascinating from a non-Lens perspective that you've got Ronan O'Gara there, the Irish perspective. So it is, like, you know, it's the modern day rivalry with an added twist with O'Gara, who always brings a bit of spice and a bit of edge. And he's a controversial figure, but is an interesting figure and he's good to listen to. So it grabs, I think, you know, it grabs a big cohort of followers that are going to follow it for different reasons. But yeah, like, it's an interesting one. And, it's, you know, I think it's now and ever for Leinster to see, can they live up to that power game that has beaten them the last few years, you know?
And Bernard?
Yeah, same. I think it's a proper rivalry now. In terms of, I suppose, regularity, in terms of close games, like, they've been phenomenal matches. It's the most excited I've been this year to go to the Viva, and that includes Ireland games. I think just obviously England and France were away, so they're obviously big fixtures, but this is massive. And like, for I don't think Leinster can really afford to lose. Obviously, there's a strong chance they can lose, but it's just in terms of them, you know, Nina Barr's come in, you've added to that. I know next year they'll be stronger with obviously Snyman, but for this generation of Leinster players who've had incredible success for Ireland, there's a gap in their CV, and it's the European Cup. And, you know, by nature of how they've played last year, obviously they had the draw meant, you know, they were home all the way and didn't close it out. This year, because of their own good form and good results, they've controlled their own destiny in terms of being able to have potentially a home quarter final, home semi final, obviously home last 16, and then go to London, which is a big carrot, you know, that's playing in that stadium. I think that's going to be a phenomenal final. So yeah, and in some ways it could make up for obviously disappointment of a World Cup if they can finish a season with a Six Nations and a Champions Cup, but it won't be easy. And just gonna be really interesting to see, have Leinster been able to learn lessons from previous defeats, or have they adapted their game to be able to match La Rochelle, who, let's be honest, they haven't been brilliant. They've actually had struggles this season, but you still give them absolute credit for what they've done over the last 2 years in the Champions Cup, and the consistency they've had in both competitions to be, you know, in top 14 finals as well at the same time. It's phenomenal.
And to follow up on what you said there, like, Leinster have to prove that they've learned from the mistakes they've made in those previous knockout meetings. As we said, I know they beat them back in December, but
I don't think it counts.
It's a different kettle of fish entirely. But what are those mistakes they made? in 2023?
Being able to control their own rook speed. And that's not easy because La Rochelle put a huge focus on making that rook a mess. And if you watch, even it's not just for Leinster, it's just what they do. The rook against the Stormers was horrible for both teams, you know, but particularly the Stormers. La Rochelle's ability post tackle to slow that ball down, to drag people in, to counter rook and put fear into you that you're going to lose the ball is phenomenal. So that's one area. Line out wise, I think if you look back in those three knockout games, there's been key line out opportunities lost, or ball stolen, which obviously has affected Leinster. Scrum has been up and down, and then just momentum, just being able to keep momentum. So obviously they had a great start, two very good first halves in the both finals, and just didn't put them away, just didn't kill them off, no killer instinct. And look, I give La Rochelle massive credit for the way they went back at Leinster, and they're unbelievably mentally tough, and that's probably the greatest testament to Ogara, is he's built a team of absolute warriors. Who have found a way to win, and Leinster's the question mark around them is, can they do the same thing?
Yeah, that to me is the big thing. Like, you know, you're looking at Leinster and you're hoping, you know, the question is, do they have now what it takes to stop La Rochelle? But what Bernard says about the mental strength and the mental capacity, it's kind of in contrast to, you know, La Rochelle. Like at the weekend, they haven't scored 50 minutes and they find a way to come back and they win. And really doesn't really matter about form with this team at times. They just find a way. And that's the difference. That's the question mark over Leinster. Like, you know, despite how well they've played over the last 3 years, despite the players they have and the style they play, you know, it's that lack of, I don't know what it, you know, that the edge to find a way, and can they find a way? And I don't know, like, nice, I don't say the word nice, but like that hyper aggression, the doggedness to just, you know, find a way to win. And they've not just been in positions, they've been in really superior positions and haven't closed it off. So question marks around Leinster. And I think Bernard's right what he said a few minutes ago, like the lack of silverware over the last few years and the question marks. Great group of players, but it will taint them if, you know, if they don't go on and do it, like, which is, and you're hoping someone like Niamh Abbott, I can never say that word, you know, has brought that from South Africa and find a way to win. Like, you look at South Africa in the World Cup, unimpressive at times, didn't look like they were in it, just find a way, and good teams find a way. So that to me will be, you know, are they in that mental place to, and I think maybe Leinster's form, that they haven't been really impressive, you know, maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's taking the pressure off them a little bit, and who knows, we won't know until the final result, but maybe it's a masterclass in getting form right and getting, you know, tapering right. I don't know, but question marks do hang over there, and, you know, we'll find out the weekend, but I think it's a big question mark over them.
It is, and it's an important one as well, like even around the just being able to get over the line and win. I know this is only a quarter final, but win tournaments and win silverware. And I think it's something, Bert, that maybe we kind of gloss over a bit because we associate Leinster with being this winning machine because they do so well for 95% of the season. But like, as an example, I was out in Donnybrook on Monday doing an interview with Caelan Dorris for the weekend. And he was pointing out, for example, you know, he's 26. He's probably the future Ireland captain in waiting and a future Leinster captain in waiting. He's never won a Champions Cup, and the only URC/Pro 14 titles he's won have been during COVID when there's been nobody in the stadium watching it. As he pointed out, he's never won a piece of silverware with Leinster in front of a stadium full of fans.
Yeah, and look, it's hard to believe, really, because as you said, we do laud them for their consistency, not just us. I mean, across, you speak to people in France or the UK who are, or even the Southern Hemisphere who are rugby people, they all, I suppose, admire Leinster's consistency. But now the problem has been is that like, what's the end product? You know what I mean? And you are judged in April, May, June, and be able to close the deal and get over the line. And like Caelan, you know, Caelan, you know, he only has to look at Aldridge and you know, Aldridge's ability have a major impact in big games, whether that's for France or La Rochelle. And he's been incredible in those clashes with Leinster. So you really, like, I think it's a good sign that the players are actually talking about it and realising that these opportunities don't come around very often, that their legacy in Leinster, while it's phenomenal and will be beyond question in terms of consistency and quality of rugby and all that stuff, really matters very little if there's not medals and trophies to show for it. That's how you kind of, I suppose, you stamp your dynasty or your impact on your team. And in actual fact, sometimes it's probably more frustrating when you see how much talent is there, you see how much depth is there. There's so many homegrown players, which is all amazing and brilliant. And then there's actually not that silverware to show for it. So that's the challenge. And you really hope that Nina Burke, you have me worried now. That he can be the Jacques, can be the difference, and the players themselves just going, right, you know, we have messed up 3 times, and that's credit to La Rochelle. They didn't mess up. They but Leinster will have certainly areas of those 3 knockout games where they felt they could have done better, and it's about putting it all together. And I don't think there's anything wrong. I think they've actually flipped a little bit. I think they're not as obsessed about playing a beautiful game or being consistent. I think there's been times this year where they've actually enjoyed just the battle and grinding it out and dealing with pressure. So I would like to think that there has been examples this year where they're better. And hopefully, from an Irish rugby point of view, it will come to fruition on Saturday.
Yeah, that's a good point, because if you look at kind of, you know, they've been so flawless and beaten teams. So the fact that they've had to battle and enjoy that battle, you know, hopefully that'll put them, because there's probably been times where they've, you know, just eased through and they haven't, you know, had those experiences to get them over. So I think that's a really good point, really.
It's important, even going back to basically my era. So the year Leinster won the European Cup 2009, if we beat Harlequins either 6-5 or yeah, I think it was 6-5 away from home. An ugly match, very unimpressive, just probably only got through because Harlequins missed a couple of kicks. Obviously, it's a Bloodgate game. On the same day, or maybe the day before, Munster absolutely annihilated Ospreys, a very good Ospreys team. And the same next week had 6 or 7 players picked for the Lions tour. Like, there was no comparison in terms of form, but on the day we managed to get past them, and that's what Leinster have to do. And La Rochelle will be the same. Their form doesn't stack up as well as Leinster, but it's irrelevant. It's absolutely irrelevant when you've got big game players. Form is irrelevant in a knockout game like this.
The one of the last points, then, interestingly, as we've seen in the last few days, Ronan O'Gara has brought La Rochelle to Cork for the week.
I think there's been a lot about this, and I've just kind of been like, oh, I don't think a whole lot about it, like, to be honest. You know, maybe Bernard disagrees. It's just, to me, it's just like, so what? You know, now, look, there is a few advantages. I suppose they're spending time together and they get more done, you know. And even things that people don't think about, you know, lads with young families and kids up at night and stuff. You get away from that kind of stuff that, you know, can be distraction. They're away from, you know, France and things, but really, do I think much about it? Not really. Like, you know, they're here, they're training. Maybe it sends out a message. People have said, oh, look, we're here, Leinster. We're here in Ireland. We're ready for you. Look, I don't know. Maybe Bernard has a completely different, but I don't really. I kind of heard it on the news a few times. I'm like, so that's my opinion. So, like, you know.
Yeah. Look, I don't think it's going to have any impact on the game unless the Leinster players let it. I do think O'Gara, particularly last year, did get into the heads of Leinster. And,
I agree.
And like, there's no doubt, look at even the fact that they were obviously making a plan for the halftime, you know, dressing room scenario shows that he's, you know, he's in their head. And so, but that's that's part of sport, isn't it? It'll either be a player or a manager who's trying to win the game before the game. But the thing about going to camp in Cork, I think actually it makes sense. It's a big part of French sport, this kind of commando stage, they call it, mentality, where if you have a big game, you do leave your home and you go and prepare in a hotel or a training venue for 3 or 4 days. And I think when you look at logistically, the fact that they come from Cape Town, there's no point in going on a stage in France and then packing up again and then going back to get your gear and then, you know, going to Dublin. I do think it makes sense. But obviously, it's an interesting one because you don't normally have a team. Obviously, in November, you know, you have the All Blacks in Castleknock and, you know, there's an open training session and blah, blah. And it is different. It's just obviously unusual for us to have this kind of where both teams are in the same country. And obviously, Rogers' connection with Cork and all that stuff, and Munster fans maybe not being the biggest supporters of Leinster fans, some of them anyway, to be fair to say. So, yeah, it's interesting. It shouldn't have any effect on the game, I said, unless Leinster let it. And I think they probably learned a lesson from last year and just need to concentrate on themselves and the individual matchups on the pitch rather than Cullen versus O'Gara.
Is it one of those things where ourselves in the media are probably very guilty of, where similarly to the likes of Razzie and Jacques Nienaber, where if you have a coach who has a habit of, number one, a habit of winning and also a habit of doing a couple of left field things, where every time they do another left field thing, we go, oh, they're pulling a masterstroke here.
That's what you're, you know, that's the kind of stereotype. Oh, what's he done next? Or what are we doing next? So you're always looking out for, I don't know, someone else that maybe isn't as controversial does it. And they're like, oh, yeah. They don't think much about it. They're like, oh, it's a good idea. But like anything, you know, after the game, it will be seen if La Rochelle, oh, it's a masterstroke, you know. Depending on the result. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. But I do think the Razzies, the Jacques Nienabers, the Rogers, they're good for the game. They're interesting.
Yeah,
like, they're incredibly. Rogers is a fascinating case study in management, in emotional intelligence, in
1 second, guys.
In being able to, I suppose, build, get a team who have no history in this competition until he went there, and get them to appreciate a competition that he loved and succeeded in as a player. Like it's like his transferable personality, the personality traits that have been a core to him, and his ability to transfer them onto a multitude of different nationalities, create a tight-knit group in a country where that necessarily isn't always the case, you know what I mean? Get individuals to put a team first. Like, I think some of the things he's done, Neil, and is continuing to do, and will probably do a lot more of them, is remarkable and interesting. So that's, I think, why from a media point of view, or from, like, I'm in a couple of different coaching groups. Some of them aren't rugby. Some of them are GA basketball, and they're all fascinated by O'Gara, you know what I mean? And they're not Munster Leinster fans. It's just they see somebody who's kind of is taking risks, is getting success, and they want to understand the mindset behind it.
Yeah, it is just one of those things, Alison, where as soon as it, like, you're always intrigued by the person who does something a little bit differently.
Yeah, I do find O'Gara really interesting. Sorry, I missed what you said there, but I do as a person find him interesting. And when you hear him talk, I like that he has a different perspective on things. And I'd say he's quite a critical thinker. He's probably quite, I don't know, deep person that likes to go maybe where other people don't go. And the fact, I think I just heard Bernard said about taking risks, and like, you got to applaud someone that's willing to take those risks and, you know, go for it and have that kind of thing about him that he's not afraid. But I would enjoy listening to him. I think his different perspective, and I think rugby needs that. I think all sport needs it. We need to sometimes get off a certain way of thinking or a certain way of playing, or, you know, because we have a lot of copycat stuff going on in the game, and someone does this, someone does this, and sometimes you people question, people don't question. But he's certainly an interesting character, and the cutting edge he has as a coach, and, you know, I don't always like what he says sometimes, but I do find he is interesting and he has different perspectives. Look, that is really important in the game, especially, look, rugby needs, I think it probably needs people like these guys to keep people interested in the sport. Sometimes it can, it, you know, years ago it was probably not as interesting, those regards, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of risk taking, time for you to take your risks. Chips on the table. Who's winning this weekend? Alison, you can go first.
Lovely. Oh, look, I'm just going to go for Leinster.
Birch?
Yeah, Leinster. Leinster by seven.
Leinster by seven. All right. We still have loads to get through. Munster beaten by Northampton at the weekend. And Bernard, it was like, it was a straight, like, I don't even know how to sum it up, because obviously Munster, they were decimated with that, the sickness in the camp beforehand, not to mention a lot of injuries beforehand as well. Like, to sum up the match, it was pretty close for the first hour. Northampton simply just had more in the tank at the end.
Yeah, particularly the bench. And look, it was definitely a hindrance and a harm to Munster, the fact that so many players ill and injured. But you just feel, I don't know, I do feel the need a couple more players to be at that level, to be able to go away to a Northampton team who are in a decent place. I don't think they're the finished article. I don't think they're potential winners or anything, but they're in a good place. And Munster just, this season, all season pretty much, their ability to finish games strong has been questionable, you know. And it's like, you know, last year they put a huge amount of focus into fitness. I don't think it's fitness. I genuinely think it's probably needing a few better athletes across and ability to bring better athletes off the bench in particular. I think they're asking a lot of their players, and it's not their fault. That's what they have, and the players are given. You can't question attitude or desire or commitment. So it's very hard to be critical of them. You can't question really the game plan, because I think the game plan has evolved, and it's clear how much they want to play, and at times they can really stretch teams and win without the ball. I think that's beyond question that Dennis Leamy, Mike Prendergast defence and attack has bedded in pretty well. It's just they probably need a bit of help now from the board or the IRFU or the player advisory group. I'm not sure who has the power, but to try and just get a couple of recruits in there to go to the next level. And that's it. I wouldn't be critical of Roundtree. I wouldn't be critical of any of the players. It's just literally, I think on the day that 23 from Northampton was younger, more powerful, and we're in a better place.
And Alison, I think it actually reminds me a little bit of the way Razzie Erasmus would have spoken around South Africa at the World Cup, where he said, like, when they won the World Cup in 2019, they hadn't really planned to win the World Cup in 2019. They were looking at the long term and the one ahead.
Yeah.
And I think there's probably an element of it with Munster where Roundtree came in to rebuild the side, and they probably won a URC title ahead of when they thought they were going to, and have obviously kind of found it difficult to back up those levels this year.
Yeah, like as Bernard said, you can't fault, you know, players there, and they had a very good first half, and then, you know, it's just faded off. But Bernard's right, they do need some more athletes, they need some more physical players. They have no one, like, to me, with a bit of X factor. Obviously, Crowley has X factor as a 10, but like someone, you know, that can do something, and along with just, you know, really, really good athletes. And you can't fault their players. I'm not sure what the story with their academy is, but like, you know, they just don't seem to be producing the same type of athlete as obviously Leinster. Obviously, you can't compare, but like, do they need help? Do they, you know, what's the story there? Like, I'm not sure. I don't know a whole lot about it, but you saw even like Zeebo was struggling towards the end, and you know, Archer having to play, you know, like, it's just, yeah, look, the injuries didn't help, but you know, they're a very honest team, and they, you know, they're playing well in terms of how they're trying to play, but you know, they don't have certain personnel to be able to carry that out, you know.
Yeah, I'll put a pin in the Munster chat for today, because I think we'll still be talking about them a lot more in the coming weeks, particularly with two games coming up in South Africa, because we do have to talk Challenge Cup and the Women's Six Nations as well. And Bernard, Connacht and Ulster both progressing in the Challenge Cup. I think you called Ulster last week. I think probably actually
called both
last week, where you know, Montpellier just didn't really fancy it, and you could see it in the second half when their discipline. I think disintegrated is actually being a little bit lenient on them for how badly disciplined they were in the second half. But Ulster weren't actually that great over the 80 minutes, but comfortably got the job done in the end. Connacht, in fairness to them, that was an impressive result to dig out in a pretty hot environment in the south of France. And it set up an interesting rematch with Benetton from a couple of weeks ago in the URC.
Yeah, look, I think the most impressive performance was Connacht's. It was far from perfect, you know, and they'll obviously still be concerned about conceding 30 points. But I thought their last 10 minutes where score was 33-10, 33-30, a penalty would have drawn it. Even, you know, even given letting Poe have another go at a drop goal would have made it a level. And they just, their defence just seemed to really step up, composed, aggressive, disciplined. And then when they got a chance to get turnovers, they got two big turnovers. One from Prendergast when he bounced on a ball he'd no right to on the ground, and the other from Hurley Langton. And then with 3 minutes to go, you know, it's back to the old Conor Murray, you know, should he kick it out? They actually ran it out of 22 and kept it for, I think, seven phases. And eventually Keane Prendergast scores in the corner, and the game is won. So I thought that was really impressive. I think they'll take a huge amount from that. Now, Poe weren't massively up for it. They rotated their side. There was hardly anyone there. Like the French clubs have no interest in the Challenge Cup.
Yeah,
maybe Clermont might.
If they get to a semi-final, they're interested.
Yeah, maybe Clermont might, because they're at home this week, quarter-final. Yeah. But yeah, I think there were two games that the Irish provinces had to win. But I think Connacht would be the happier of them. I mean, Richie would be delighted, obviously, because it's a win for them, and they get a cup run. But I think he'll still have issues and concerns around the performance. But that's natural. He's only in the job a short time, whereas the Connacht coaches will feel it's now. They should be really starting to click.
Ali, like, it's, I think it's probably important for the two provinces as well to get another match there as well for Connacht, because they're kind of, they've been caught in this up and down season where the, you know, results have been on and off in the URC, and I think ultimately if they finish out the season and have potentially reached a Challenge Cup semi-final and secured their top eight in the URC, they can probably box that off and say that is it's a reasonable campaign all round. For Ulster, as Bernard kind of said, Richie Murphy being in the interim gig, he just wants as many games as he can possibly get between now and the end of the season to show off that he is the man for the job going forward.
Yeah, like, you're right about Connacht, and they've been up and down, and they've sometimes been incredibly soft in defence, and, you know, you're looking at them, and then, you know, the following week, you know, they show great patches of play and huge physicality, and they've been up and down, but you're dead right, like, they'll just want to, if they can get to that part of the season, as I said, and have that measure of success, they'll be happy. But for Ulster, yeah, look, it's just important for them to get the win, and, like, when you look at their team, really good players, like, so for Richie Murphy to get a win, to get to know more about them, to know what makes them tick, and, like, you know, his mentality of his players and what he has to work on. Like, it's such a learning. He's been, like, it's difficult for him to win at this stage, but the more games, you know, and obviously the wins, and look, it was, you know, such an up, like, the amount of red cards and yellow cards, and Montpellier are just having 12 people on the field at one stage. So, like, it's hard, you know, but they were obviously bullied in the first half and were down, but to come back at least and get the win, they'll be happy with that. And just more games, the better, hopefully more wins, and just to see where this team, you know, where they're lacking, where they're at, what he needs to work on putting. Can he has very little time, but he'll try and maybe fix a few things and put his spin on it.
What odds of a Connacht Ulster final in May, Bernard? Probably a long shot.
I'd say it's a long shot, to be fair. I think it's a long shot. Look at Connacht will. Treviso is a winnable game for Connacht. They'll obviously have to improve again. But I think Treviso's mindset, I think they have a lot of quality, and they just haven't really been, they haven't bounced back to best form post Six Nations, but you'd imagine they, like, that would give them a massive boost. Remember they won the Rainbow Cup or something. So again, it's a chance for silverware for them.
It is 100%. So both of those games this weekend. We will move on now to the Women's Six Nations, Ireland and Wales, this Saturday evening. Bit of an unfortunate clash, really, with the Leinster La Rochelle game. 4:45 kickoff for the Women's Six Nations and 5:30 for the the Leinster La Rochelle game. But this down in Cork, and the big news, obviously, Alison, came out on Friday evening, four paragraphs down, just discreetly in a press release and the squad update from the IRFU. Cliona Maloney, after 2.5 years, is back in the Irish squad.
Yeah, fair play for just dipping it in there without making too much fuss.
Well, it didn't work because I was on media duty yesterday out in the Sport Ireland campus, and I think about 90% of the questions were about Cliona's return.
Yeah, so. Which it would be loving. Yeah, hallelujah. Thank God. Like, you know, no one was buying the lack of form nonsense that was coming out of mouths last year when she wasn't being picked. You know, like, she's a phenomenal player. We are not at the stage that we can leave players like her quality out of our squad. And, you know, Niamh Jones is a very good hooker, but sometimes her throwing can let her down. She's very good around the field. But, like, Cliona's there now. Suddenly, you've competition between the two of them. You're forcing, she's forcing, you know, Niamh Jones to, you know, let's get your throwing absolutely, you know, where it needs to be, and let's have a bit of competition. So it's brilliant to see Cliona back. Look, she said what was needed to be said at the time, and she got punished. A lot of players stood with her and they got to play. So look, it's great to see her coming back into the squad. And she's a big physical player. She's a big ball carrier. She's that physical presence that we don't have. We don't have a lot of that naturally in the country with our women's players. So like, we need to have her there, and it's great. And great to have her back. And to me, I'm happy to see him make that decision. I'm like, good. Like, you know what you want. You're the coach. You're picking the team. And that to me says that's where it needs to be after all the years of that not happening. You know, that's the important thing for me.
Yeah. You know, and Bernard, I think that's the nail on the head, Bernard, where as good a player as Cliona Maloney is and has been for Ireland, it's probably as important a step in terms of off field stuff than it is on field.
Yeah, I think it's a good sign that hopefully it's been treated properly and that the coaches are being given the respect to allow pick the best players. That's how it seems to me. And look, speaking to some of the players involved in this squad, they do feel there's been a bit of a dial change from the IRFU in terms of, it's not perfect. There's still debate around, you know, the fact you have to be kind of centralized and live in Dublin to be part of it, etc. So it's not perfect, but yeah, there's been a sea change in terms of the coaching investment, in terms of the preparation, travel kit, all those things that, you know, we've seen blow up a bit over the last 4 or 5 years, unfortunately, but and that's regrettable. But I suppose the most important thing is that it changes and it's fixed. And I think this is just another sign that the worm has turned and there's a desire to give them the best possible chance of winning or performing. And look at Wales and Scotland are tough challenges based on the improvements they've shown. But it'd be great for Ireland to get a win or two wins to finish off this campaign.
Yeah, it certainly would. And then looking ahead to this weekend's game then, Alison, we were kind of talking off air just before we started, and I think the general gist of what we were saying was it's actually difficult to get a read on Wales at the moment, because obviously they had that very, very close defeat to Scotland in the opener and then a heavy defeat against England. But you kind of can't really analyse anyone's result against England because the gulf is so wide.
They scored tries against England, which many teams don't do.
Yeah.
And, you know, had good phases of play, and they were without Jasmine Joyce, who is like an X-factor player. And if we're looking at, you know, potential matchup 14-11, Bavin Parsons, you know, and she got the same speed as Bavin. She's in the seventh circuit as well. So, yeah, you can't get a read. It's very hard to get a read of any team, really, because we don't really see the players week in, week out with their teams and stuff. And, you know, sometimes you are, like, expecting. It was like the first game against France, you know, Ireland played, and we probably, in retrospect, Ireland didn't play as well as we thought, because France aren't really at the races as much as we thought this year. When we look back at the... Scotland have vastly improved, but when you look at them playing against France are just not playing good rugby for the ability they have. So it's sometimes hard to read into results and scoreline. But Wales have, you know, they've big physical girls. They have... they're well able to use the size. They've always... Welsh women's rugby have always had a very good tight game, and they're able to keep it tight. And use their size, and they've always been hard to play against, regardless if they've been dominant or not. They're always very hard to play against. So, you know, it's going to be tough for Ireland coming back after that loss against Italy, because just against Italy, and just to go back to the Italy game, I just thought some of the selections were just a little bit off in terms of maybe not showing Italy the respect that they deserved. They would be one of the most experienced team in terms of caps. There's girls playing there for 2013, 2014, and good players. But hopefully we'll see like Bidel, Tricky McMahon. But in, we're just lacking composure when we need it. Like, you know, the game has been there to win. And I think they're a very young team, and it probably goes back a little bit to, you know, learn your bread and butter at, you know, club rugby and stuff like that, even though the argument is it's not good enough. But actually, as Bernard alluded to, like, centralising everyone to Dublin puts out everyone in the same clubs, and then you have a massive disparity of like three really good Dublin clubs with all the players playing, and that doesn't help either. There's obviously a myriad of other factors, but yeah, like, it's just, hopefully I want to see an Ireland that, you know, just knows how to finish and knows how to keep the composure and stay in a game, because and as Bernard said as well, there is, you know, more buy-in from the RFU, which when everything's in place, then we have to put the responsibility, hopefully, then only on players. We're not saying, oh, they don't have this, that, and the other. We can just analyse their actual performance, which I think is important going forward. And it's important, like, Scott Beaman can pick his players, which hasn't always happened in the past. So, roundabout way, it'll be a close affair, I think, yeah.
Bernard, from a coaching point of view, Is it tricky kind of like trying to improve those small issues from, like, if you look back at the game against Italy, where there were so many errors and so many handling errors and just simple mistakes like that. But when you actually look at them, the vast majority of the mistakes were mistakes that in theory and on paper should be very, very easy to correct. Like, it was just a simple little bit of catch pass stuff, or a simple bit of decision making at the wrong, bad decision making at the wrong time. Is it difficult to actually balance out trying to get players to work on those mistakes and highlight those mistakes, but also at the same time kind of remind everyone there's the foundation and there's the basis of a lot of good stuff here, and you kind of can't forget all of that?
Yeah, I think actually it's fixable, and fixable quickly, because the thing that takes time is actually, I suppose,
and everything.
Yeah, getting people in the right position, which they were, by and large. And there's a clear way Ireland are trying to play, and the players were obviously knew what to do. It's just, unfortunately, their ability to recycle the ball, to nail those catch pass situations at times let them down. But I think they're better than that. I genuinely do, and I think another 2 weeks together, another game, maybe less pressure playing away from home, might just, you know, there was quite a bit of expectation. It would have been, you know, they would have realized that was not playing away from home, but there was quite a lot of hype about RDS and it was going to be a record crowd. It was the first home game. They come off the back of obviously a good performance against France, and expectation was we were going to win. And I think they played like a team who were just maybe pressurized. Whereas this week it seems, you know, that there's not as much expectation, but I think that he will have shown them examples of the opportunities they created, and it's just a case of being patient and creating them. You'll work on your skills all the time. It's not going to be skills aren't going to improve massively in the 2 weeks between both games, but it might be just a little bit less pressure, maybe better selection, as Alison said, and more combinations and nailing those opportunities. And I don't think Italy are miles behind Wales from what I've seen. But I do agree with us, and Wales will bring power. And I think we have to be able to implement that game plan that was obviously there against Italy, but just obviously be more accurate.
Yeah. So that is 4:45 on Saturday evening. Finally, give us a prediction for that one at the weekend. Alison, I'll let you go first again.
I'll let you go first again. how can you not say Ireland? I'm going to say Ireland, but it's going to be tight. And look, we need to But I've said before as well, you've got a player like Parsons there. She needs to get herself off the wing if it's not coming to her, because that's the modern game. She's been a marked woman since she's 16.
Yeah.
You know, so it's running those ghost lines off 9 and 10, getting around, you know, trailing behind a 12. And that's sometimes where, especially like a team like Wales, running at their front five, you know, rather than someone like Jasmine Joyce, who's equal speed. So I think hopefully, look, I've gone off there, sorry, but you have to have a license to do that as a winger. Like, you have to have someone saying, look, go do it. So I don't know if maybe they're so just a young team, they're trying to hammer home defense and get that right. So maybe they don't have a license. Maybe they do. I don't know. But that's what I'd like to see. Someone like her that could make things happen. If it's not coming to her, just get off your wing, because I think her, like, around runner from five, Wales forwards, big girls, she would be unstoppable. And I think we did see a little bit of them trying to come off their wing a little bit more last week, but I think that's an evolution for her, for being that player that's going to be marked out in the wing to try and do that. So that would be key, I think, as well.
Yeah, certainly is. And then Bernard, prediction for you?
Yeah, I think Ireland can win this week. I think they will actually be obviously disappointed what happened against Italy, but I've seen a lot of good stuff that with a little bit more accuracy, they can actually convert. And I think they can beat Wales. I don't think Wales are all that.
All right. So that is 4:45 PM Saturday afternoon. Live commentary on RTÉ Radio 1. Also live commentary as well. We'll be back and forth between that and Leinster and La Rochelle in the Champions Cup on Radio 1. And that's also on the box as well on RTÉ2 and RTÉ Player Saturday evening. Bernard and Ali, thanks a million for joining us. And we'll speak to you again soon.